Welcome to Room 4216. I'm so glad you've come.
Hi, Cecilia.
Hi, Pastor Dave.
Good to be back. Hold it. What is that noise? Did you get a popcorn maker or something?
I did, yeah.
Oh, man. I love popcorn. Is that for all of us here?
Well, sure it is.
Yay! That's awesome. That'll be great for our episode today. Mm-hmm. I am so excited to get going with it. Shall we?
Sure. Let's do it.
Today, we begin our study in Luke with chapter 11, verses 37 through 41.
When Jesus had finished speaking, a Pharisee invited him to eat with him. So he went in and reclined at the table. But the Pharisee, noticing that Jesus did not first wash before the meal, was surprised. Then the Lord said to him, "Now then, you Pharisees clean the outside of the cup and dish, but inside you are full of greed and wickedness. You foolish people! Did not the one who made the outside make the inside also? But give what is inside the dish to the poor, and everything will be clean for you."
Well, here we have Jesus at a meal, not popcorn, but he moved quickly from the meal conversation to something else.
Mm-hmm.
It was the tradition and custom back then that people wash their hands in a ceremonial wash to show that they are clean for eating the meal. This is something the Pharisees always emphasized so very, very hard.
So what was so special about this ritual washing? I mean, did they have ceremonial bowls in a certain way they poured the water over their hands that made it so sacred and special?
To my knowledge, not really. I mean, yes, over time they developed special bowls and it's at the door and things like that. But really, it just meant you wash your hands before the meal to be cleansed so that you would be eating the meal with a clean heart and clean hands.
So, wait. What's wrong with this? I mean, Jesus is getting all upset at the Pharisees, but all they wanted to do was make sure that they had clean hands. I mean,
yeah,
especially
well,
in this. Well, I remember as a child, there was a Sesame Street song that they taught us.
A Sesame Street song?
Uh-huh. I'll give you a little piece of it.
Wash your hands before you eat. Give those germs a clean sweep. And make sure you clean your nails. Put that dirt into jail.
Well, now, ain't that quite interesting?
Yes.
My goodness. Okay.
I mean, why are the Pharisees picking on Jesus about this?
Well, really, our modern day, especially with the viruses that we have going on around and we're supposed to wash our hands all the time, that's mm-hmm. not a this is a late century discovery with hygiene. About the last three centuries. Prior to that, they didn't worry about washing their hands because they didn't really realize the hands were carrying viruses. And so it was a good thing that they washed their hands. God did that, but they didn't understand why. But more to the point was the Pharisees were thinking they just had to do it on the outside. And it didn't matter what was on the inside, as long as you did the ritual correctly, meaning you did it. And Jesus was saying, no, the whole point of this was so that your heart would be clean, not just your hands. And see, that's the thing. Today, we're not worried about the heart being clean so much in our country, sad to say, but just the hands clean. Well, Jesus is talking here, really, this is more about the heart and that the heart always had to be cleansed. And that's why often we pray before a meal, thanking God for the food and asking him to bless it, because it's turning back to God, the giver of all gifts, including that evening's meal or popcorn snack.
I keep hearing so many names in the Bible of so many groups of people, like the
right.
Pharisees and such.
Right, we just had them.
So I'm wondering, who were these Pharisees?
Well, there's several different groups. You want to look at all of them?
As a matter of fact, I already did.
Oh.
Yeah, I did my homework.
Okay, go ahead.
Well, let's start out with the Pharisees. The Pharisees were a very popular group in their day, and they knew it. They weren't the group that was in control of the government or the temple, necessarily, but they were very popular with the people. They believed that they needed to get back to the ways of Moses and David. And to do that, they needed to separate themselves completely from the Gentiles. And the separation was done in several ways. A lot of rituals. Washing was a very, very important one to them. So was fasting. In the Old Testament, you read that you're supposed to fast a couple of times a year. They believed they needed to fast a couple of times a week.
Mm. So they were not only by the book, they were by the book.
Boy, were they ever.
Okay. And that explains why they were so concerned on the outside of things that you're doing everything correctly, and they were forgetting the inside, their heart. Okay. All right. That's the Pharisees. Now, you said they weren't in charge. Who was in charge?
The Sadducees.
Ah, yeah. We hear about them.
Mm-hmm. The Sadducees had control of the government. They did not do much with the temple, as far as they didn't go to the temple for services and such. And they didn't believe in a resurrection. But even more surprising to me, they didn't even believe in the Messiah.
Really?
Like most Jews did.
Well, you know, what comes to my mind right now, hearing the Sadducees, that's in a way like in the United States with the there's three groups of Judaism, Reform, and then there's the Conservative, and then there's the Orthodox. The Reform, they don't believe in a resurrection, they don't believe in a Messiah, they just believe in making your life better right now. Where at the other extreme of the Orthodox, you got to do everything right by the book. Well, I guess they'd be like the Pharisees.
Yeah, I guess they would.
Huh, okay.
Now, there were subgroups of the Pharisees.
Mm-hmm.
There were the scribes. The scribes were very into the written law and written scrolls, and they wrote down the Torah, which is the first five books of the Old Testament, and they believed in the importance of preserving those records and such.
And that does make sense, because most of everything back then was done orally, and it wasn't like our playing telephone. They were strict about the oral transmission.
Mm-hmm.
But yet that was checked then by these written scrolls. That was the baseline that they would always be learning from. Okay.
And
the scribes did that.
They didn't like to change either. You're always hearing about the scribes and the Pharisees who were against Jesus.
How long ago that started, or who started that?
Well, Ezra was the first one who was called a scribe.
Oh,
he lived before Christ.
But yeah, he helped with the rebuilding of the temple after the Babylonians destroyed it. And he came back from captivity, Persia captivity, and helped build the temple. And so he did that as well. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
But even before that, there were people who were starting to discover the scrolls with the laws of Moses and such again.
So
that they go back quite a way, even before the New Testament.
Yeah. Yeah, we're talking 400 or 500 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
There were also the teachers of the law, the rabbis, and they were the ones who taught the people. They were the ones who were kind of in league with the Pharisees and the others in power, and they worked with the people. Then there was the Sanhedrin. That's kind of like your local church council. That involved both the Pharisees and the Sadducees,
We hear about that, especially when Jesus went to Jerusalem, and the Sanhedrin were very upset with Jesus because he came into Jerusalem as a mighty king. And then when after the resurrection, Peter and John went in and they gave healing to a man in Acts chapter 3, and the Sanhedrin was chastising him. Yeah, that was the power. That was the power.
Mm-hmm. And finally, we have the Essenes. They're kind of a footnote, although they're fascinating because they lived... they had settlements around Jerusalem and Judea. They also had a settlement at Qumran. You might recognize that name. Because
I do.
It was. It's believed that they probably wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, which were discovered at Qumran. So that's kind of all the groups of the New Testament Jewish power structure in a nutshell.
Well, thank you for that work and research that will help us as we continue on now, reading through the Gospel of Luke.
Don't want to be a Pharisee, don't want to be a Pharisee, cause they're not fair, you see. Don't want to be a Pharisee, I just want to be a sheep, ba-ba-ba. I just want to be a sheep, ba-ba-ba. I pray the Lord my soul to keep, I just want to be a sheep, ba-ba-ba. Don't want to be a Sadducee,
don't wanna be a Sadducee. Cause they're so sad, you see. Don't wanna be a Sadducee. I just wanna be a sheep. I just wanna be a sheep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. I just wanna be a sheep.
So in our Bible study here now, we have Jesus at the Pharisee's house, and he just kind of threw an insult at him by saying, you know, you got to have the inside clean, not just the outside. Because the Pharisees were so intent on the outside and getting everything right. So Jesus took this opportunity to say, no. It's the inside that counts as well. And now we're going to find in the next couple of verses that we read, Jesus does six woes, meaning how sad for you.
Whoa, wait a minute.
Huh?
Before we do that, this stuff is a bit depressing, and it's talking to the Pharisees. So tell me, why are listeners going to be glad they've listened to this podcast?
Oh, okay. Well, there's a couple of reasons, I guess you could say. One, it's pointing out it's not about the literalistic keeping of the law, because if you try to do that, you'll never be able to do it.
Right.
We're never able to be good enough to be perfect. And that's what the Pharisees are always trying to do. And Jesus is saying, no, there's something else involved. And he's pointing to us. And in the middle of all this, he's even alluding to the fact that it has nothing to do with you and how we get close to God, but God is coming close to us. So in the middle of these woes and at the end of the woes, we're going to hear a word of comfort from Jesus.
Woe to you Pharisees, because you give God a tenth of your mint and rue and all other kinds of garden herbs, but you neglect the justice and love of God. You should have practiced the latter without leaving the former undone.
Cecilia, have you ever heard of the phrase keeping the letter of the law and the spirit of the law?
Oh, sure.
Can you think of a time maybe as a kid you kept the letter of the law but not really the spirit of the law?
Cecilia, clean your room. Oh, okay. Let's see. Oh, there's stuff under the bed. Shove it in the closet. Oh, there's stuff on the floor. Shove it in the closet.
Okay, that's good.
Everything else, shove it in the closet.
Yeah, you sort of did it, but you sort of didn't. Yep. Uh-huh. Yep. And that's what Jesus is trying to point out here. When the Pharisees, literally, they always were trying to give a tenth of everything. And so they even went to their gardens and what they were growing. And these were just aromatic, oh, it's easy for you to say that, aromatic spices. Well, they were even tithing that and trying to do everything to the letter of the law. But they forgot the spirit of the law. And that's what Jesus is saying. It's not just to give to God, but to give to God your heart and do what God wants. And that's justice and love.
Woe to you Pharisees, because you love the most important seats in the synagogues and greetings in the marketplaces.
I think this one's kind of obvious. The Pharisees were always looking for recognition. They wanted to be seen as important, as a people who were religious, that everyone would look up to them. And you know what they were forgetting, of course?
They were forgetting the humility of being God's people.
Yep. And how often do we do that? I know I do that.
I do.
I'm a good person and I'm doing right and I forget the humility aspect.
And you're the pastor.
Yeah.
Woe to you, because you are like unmarked graves which men walk over without knowing it.
This one is interesting. I didn't get it right away.
I didn't either.
We had to go looking in commentaries to fully understand this one. The Pharisees, as you remember, always wanted to be clean, perfectly clean before God. That's what started this whole thing with the hand washing. Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that made them unclean also was touching dead things, dead people. And if By the way, did you ever have that saying when you're walking down the sidewalk, step on a crack, break your mother's back, and you try not to say, yeah. And it's pretty hard for a blind person not to step on a crack. Mm-hmm. And I remember doing that. Oh, no, I'm going to break my mom's back, you know, being superstitious like. Well, that's almost what the Pharisees were, being superstitious. I can't even walk over an unmarked grave because if I do, I'm going to be unclean and I won't even know it.
Mm-hmm. And then they couldn't go to the temple.
That's right. And Jesus is saying, well, you are unclean and you don't even know it. That's the twist on this.
He's not saying you're stepping on an unmarked grave. He's saying you are.
Yes. And they are unclean because you are dirty, because you are dead inside.
One of the experts in the law answered him, "Teacher, when you say these things, you are insulting us also." Jesus replied, "And you, experts in the law, woe to you, because you load people down with burdens they can hardly carry, and you yourselves will not lift one finger to help them."
It's really good that you did go through all these different groups because the teachers of the law were a subsection very focused on keeping the letter of the law. That's what a lawyer was back then. Mm-hmm. And so they were saying basically what Jesus was talking about was that the lawyers, the teachers of the law, these people were saying, okay, we got to keep the Ten Commandments, but in order to keep the Ten Commandments, we're going to have to make sure we can really keep them. So we're going to add some additional laws. And they literally had built up 616 different laws that they felt if you could keep all these 616, then you're safe in keeping.
Now, these were not laws written in the law
Excuse
of...
me. No, not at all.
Not written in the law of Moses. These were things that the Pharisees and teachers of the law created themselves.
Exactly. And they figure if you can keep these other 616, well, then you have kept the 10. Mm. And we got to make sure we keep these 10 because, you know, do I really know if I'm stealing or greedy? Well, if you keep these 616, then you will know. And Jesus is saying, you add so many burdens. And then you sit back. It's almost like they're sitting back, crossing their arm, going, yeah, let's see how you can handle this one. Huh? Mm-hmm. And they don't. And they can't. And they don't even, after giving all these laws, even say, here's how you can try to do it. Here's what I'll help you do. They left them to wander on their own.
Woe to you, because you build tombs for the prophets, and it was your forefathers who killed them. So, you testify that you approve of what your forefathers did. They killed the prophets, and you build their tombs. Because of this, God, in his wisdom, said, I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill, and others they will persecute. Therefore, this generation will be held responsible for the blood of all the prophets that has been shed since the beginning of the world, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who was killed between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, this generation will be held responsible for it all.
Here again, this one I kind of scratched my head with.
Uh-huh.
Well, the first part is easy in that Jesus is saying you're building these nice tombs. You're trying to honor the prophets. But quite frankly, you have the same attitude as your forefathers who killed them. And if you have the same attitudes, if they were here right now, you would be killing them too. So that's partly what he's saying.
So that, basically, if I could say, well, I'm not doing this evil crime or persecuting this particular people. Mm-hmm. Maybe my ancestors did. I don't know. But if I have the same attitude toward this particular people, it's as if I'm killing them.
Doing the crime because you will do it anyway. Yeah. And that's the thing about the generations. We hand down from generation to generation attitudes. And that's why there's a verse that talks in the Bible about the I'll visit the third and fourth generation of those who hate me. Because we pass these attitudes and thought processes on to our children. And so Jesus is pointing out to them, you're no better than your forefathers. In fact, prophets have been coming and going, and he talks about the prophets and the apostles. And not only that, but then God sent his son. Jesus will tell a parable similar to that later on in Luke, where first I sent this servant, then that servant, then I'll send my son. Maybe they'll honor him. Nope, they kill him too. And so he was predicting that they were going to kill him, the Messiah, the Son of God, right here. And this is especially where we can find our greatest comfort. And it goes on by saying, you're going to be guilty for all the blood because they killed the Savior. They are guilty. But you know what? We all are guilty. We're all guilty. And that's where our great comfort comes and why this lesson can be important for us. Because if we only look to our lives, our externals, and what we do, well, then we're sunk.
Yeah.
But if we look to Jesus and what he has done, then not only our guilt, but even the guilt that went to that generation, he died for it on the cross. That's why he cried out, "It is finished." Paid in full. He took all the sin, all the guilt of all that we have done, every single generation. All we need to do is trust in him for that forgiveness.
Oh, this is such a great message to end on. Yeah, forgiveness and...
Mm-hmm. It is, but we have one more woe. And even though there's a woe, there's a positive to it. So go ahead and please read it.
Woe to you experts in the law, because you have taken away the key of knowledge. You yourselves have not entered, and you have hindered those who were entering.
What we have here is Jesus saying, you know, even though there's a woe here, there is a positive. The key is here, the key to heaven. And the teachers of the law had it in their hands. They just weren't using it. They were locking themselves and other people out. And that is the challenge you and I have. We have the keys to the kingdom as well. We know that news that Jesus is the one who saves. It's not about us and our actions. That's the letter of the law, and we'll fail. Mm-hmm. But the spirit of the law is Jesus forgives, and we now can live in his spirit and tell others about this.
I was just going to say, along with the fact that we have the keys to that knowledge, comes some responsibility.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And so we should be opening the door for others. Hey, here's the open door to heaven. Come on in. It's Jesus.
Hey,
he's forgiven us.
Here's a podcast you can listen to that tells you more about it. Hey, you know, here's some encouraging words.
When Jesus left there, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law began to oppose him fiercely and to besiege him with questions, waiting to catch him in something he might say.
Yeah, and people might think right away, they didn't even get it, and they're conspiring to try to kill him. Yeah, it's true, but which one of us don't get it the first time either? And look at some of these Pharisees. They did come to faith.
Nicodemus.
Joseph of Arimathea.
Mm-hmm.
Saul, who became Paul, and many, many more. And so there's always that opportunity that God gives for us to look to him in love and forgiveness for his help and his strength. And we'd love to hear from you, because if we can be of help, or if you can be of help for love and forgiveness and strength, together we're able to share this message. And you can write us at
info,
I-N-F-O,
at not-alone.net.
And remember, we are not alone.
Do come back again to room 4216.
Credits: Wash Your Hands Before You Eat, Sesame Street, I Just Wanna Be a Sheep, Studio Musicians, and Terry Nord and Robert Vaughn, Interlude Musicians.